A link to details on our website, as well as our previous interview with Professor Linebaugh on Guantanamo and habeas corpus. That does it for our broadcast. Democracy Now! Is hiring a senior news producer and an engagement editor. Find out more at democracynow.org, both full-time jobs based here in New York City. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Aaron Mate, Nermeen Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkoff, Hani Massoud, Robbie Karen, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Anna Osbeck, Mike DeFilippo, and Miguel Nogueira are engineers. Special thanks to Julie Crosby, Elizabeth Press, Hugh Grand, David Prude, Vesta Gadars. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8 o'clock. Coming up next is more talk radio with our hosts Celeste Carey and Cecil Prescott. Today, please do join us in a discussion about rites of passage.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to be the sponsor of the 28th Annual Waterfront Blues Festival, taking place from July 2nd through the 5th at Waterfront Park in Portland. The Blues Festival includes cruises like the Blue Bayou Cruise, the Rock the Boat Dance Cruise, Drifting Blues Cruise, and the Sail On Sister Cruise, as well as after-hour performances featuring Galactic, Charmaine Neville, Big Bad Voodoo Daddy, and the Paladins. Again, that's the 28th Annual Waterfront Blues Festival, Thursday, July 2nd through Sunday, July 5th at the Waterfront Park in Portland. For more information, go to kboo.fm/Waterfront Blues Festival 2015.
Attention KBOO members and listeners. The KBOO Foundation is seeking to fill four upcoming vacancies on the Board of Directors. Terms run 3 years, beginning on October 1st. The nomination packet, due July 11th, is posted on the KBOO website and paper copies are available at the station. Candidates must submit the completed nomination packet via email to kboocommunity@gmail.com or mail or drop off the completed nomination packet, care of Timothy Welp, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Incomplete forms will not be considered as fulfilling the statement of interest requirement by the KBOO bylaws. Packets are due by Saturday, July 11th. The candidate statements submitted as part of the nomination packet will be posted to KBOO's website, and candidates will be expected to participate in an interview for broadcast and a Q&A session at the annual meeting. For more information, please contact the nominating committee at kboocommunity@gmail.com.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Nepal Aid Concert, Saturday, June 20th at 7 p.m. at 4200 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. The event will feature live music by Manda and the Latin Sound Trio, poetry by Alex Dang, Nepali dance performances and lessons, and more. Again, that's the Nepal Aid Concert, Saturday, June 20th, 7 p.m. at 4200 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You're listening to KBOO. This is More Talk Radio. My name is Cecil Prescott.
My name is Celeste Carey, and the show is More Talk Radio, brought to you by your community connection, KBOO Portland. 90.7 here in the metro area, 104.3 in points south, and points east is 91.9, and in the ether, it is KBOO.FM.
And let us give you our phone numbers so that you might join us in our conversation this morning. Our numbers are 503-231-8187, and you may also email us at moretalkradio@gmail.com. So today is June 15th.
Oh, it's the Ides of June.
The Ides of June. And you know, yesterday was June 14th.
Okay.
And it was Flag Day.
Oh, okay. I've forgotten about Flag Day since I'm no longer in elementary school.
Oh, well. Well,
it was a big thing then.
In elementary school.
Yeah.
And Boy Scouts, and I remember learning how to fold the flag and all of that.
Oh, I remember blowing taps when I was in grade school, because I was in the drum and bugle corps, and I had a bugle. That was my job.
Uh-huh.
And also as a... in the military, yeah. But I don't remember anything else about Flag Day.
Okay. Well,
I thought I was doing good.
I think you did very well. I simply mentioned that because, you know, as a youngster, that was sort of like a rite of passage.
Absolutely.
And I thought that might tie in with our topic this morning.
Well, there's another thing that made me think of rites of passage in the first place, and mm-hmm. that was attending a family member's graduation and watching all these young people toss up their hats before they'd actually move their tassel.
Oh.
And we had to explain to them, you haven't officially graduated yet. Yes. And having them sheepishly chase their hats and put them back on
and then
arrange the tassel and go through all of that. And it was really funny because, you know, for one moment, we all just stopped, laughed, we're human, but we still observed a rite of passage.
Certainly.
And what made it significant in that moment was not just the humor and the enthusiasm of the young people to get past this point, but the fact that was an act that we committed as a community, and it kind of aligned the stars and planets, so to speak. Everyone for that moment had a role, a place. They understood what it was. They had made a positive achievement. And it was just full of celebration and recognition and matriculation.
And matriculation, the mm-hmm. beginning. I was wondering, because yesterday I attended PSU graduation,
mm-hmm.
and it seems like thousands of graduates and their parents, and a couple of things I noticed. One was the rituals associated with it that,
yes,
I suppose has some meaning that for many of us are lost, but yet we still continue those same practices. And two things I noticed, you know, the processional of the graduate,
mm-hmm.
then the processional of the dean
practice.
And the faculty,
mm-hmm.
and then at the end of the ceremony, they did not toss their hats in the air before they moved, but the president of the university asked them to move their tassel from one side to the other. And so, you know, all part of this ritual that many people, what I noticed also, from many different cultures. So that was also fascinating for me, because you have people from I forgot how many states he stated,
mm-hmm.
and how many nations, and people, and after the ceremony, when people join their family in the courtyard, you know, everyone taking pictures, but also this mixture of cultures was also, I thought, was somewhat striking for me. but all united by that rite of passage of celebrating as a larger community, and then as smaller communities and families. And before that, I participated, well, you know, in other rituals that same day, you know, church, which is right. A ritual, but also at the church, it was also a baby shower, which is sort of like the beginning of life.
A real beginning.
And then also yesterday here in Portland, there was the Pride celebration, mm-hmm. which for many is a rites of passage in terms of recognizing and celebrating sexual identity and sexual orientation and gender identity.
So, and a measure of courage.
Certainly, yeah.
And so, you know, one of the things that I find really interesting is, and I'm sure Robert Putnam, who wrote Bowling Alone and another book recently, would speak to this, and that is the diminishing of ritual in at least U.S. culture, such as it is, and how the diminishing of culture seems to weaken some of the bonds that not only hold us together and create a community, but give us a sense of identity. In some cultures, and actually in all cultures, there was some type of ritual to indicate that you were no longer a child.
Yes.
You know, what your name was, what your place was, and by place, I mean not only in terms of your familial structure, but in terms of what gifts or talents or roles you were expected to fill within your extended family, whether it be tribal or a township or whatever. And we seem to have had those really disappear at, I think, a critical time where so many other things that have been benchmarks and landmarks have disappeared as well. I think the closest thing that we have besides high school graduation, college graduation, might be getting a driver's license or getting a Social Security card, no longer is, because you get that at birth now. Yeah. And so, you know, I thought it would be really interesting for us as a community today to talk about the importance of rites of passage in your life. What significance do you give to them, if any? Which ones do you as a community or family still note? Which ones have you created in the absence of any really strongly defined rites of passage within the United States culture? And if you're from another country especially, have you brought a rite of passage with you, and do you share it with your community? And if not, you know, just describe what it is and how it keeps you grounded and positively aligned with the better part of society, the, you know, community, yourself, your higher power, whichever.
So to please give us a call and share with us and with the community at large those rites of passage that are important to you and to your community. Again, our numbers are 503-231-8187, or you may email us at moretalkradio@gmail.com.
Okay, so why people are running to their phones, I know it's Monday, but come on, get up. Get your beverage of choice. You know, there you go. All right. Now get over to your favorite chair. All right. Pull over if you're driving. All right. There you go. I like that. Now get your phone out. And dial the digits. So personally, what rite of passage do you note? I mean, you know, we talk about birthdays.
Birthdays.
That's yeah. Something in America we do try to make a big deal about.
Birthdays are important. Weddings.
Okay.
And I realize as I get older, funerals or memorials, strangely enough, are important for me because it's a way to look back and remember people I think one thing that has changed in terms of how we recognize death is that our rituals around that, and certainly in this culture, has changed so that you look at how your grandparents might have captured or memorialized the ending of life and how we do it in our society now, very much different. So, for example, there was a time where you had a wake in many cultures.
Yes.
Sometimes at home with the body,
mm-hmm.
And people remembering and celebrating the life of that person. You often had a funeral with a body in the casket present at the place where you would have that ceremony. And often in years past, if I'm talking about in Christian context in particular, if you had a funeral at a church, you would often then take the casket and you walk into the churchyard where you would bury the person. You would say some words.
And you served, somebody served as a pallbearer, meant that you were kind of a steward, I guess.
Oh, yes, yeah. That has changed. I've recognized that oftentimes funerals or memorial service, because they're usually without a body, cremation is much more popular these days rather than the physical body. And so things have changed in terms of how we talk about death. And that could be a whole other conversation. But that was just one of those rites of passage that I think we all...
An inevitable one, for sure.
Oh, mm-hmm. What about you? What are some things that you remember, perhaps in your younger days, that were... You mentioned a couple earlier.
Well, you know, I found that a lot of the rites of passage that I went through earlier in my life were tied to school or some type of civic occasion. And those kind of have an interesting color, if you will, for me, because being a person of color, it was as though you... were both taking part and not taking part at the same time, because you still felt marginalized. And so point of reference, okay, would be like, we had parades, you were either going to be a majorette or a drum major or drum and bugle corps or something like that. So my brothers and I decided we wanted to be in the drum and bugle corps, and we got our bugles and we would play. But because we were the only black kids in it, you know, we got marginalized a lot. And it's no, I'm going to march. You know, we're going to march. And my brothers were trying not to be intimidated by it, and I'm going to admit I was too, to a degree, by that type of marginalization. But it was still something that you had this quasi participation in, you know. You know,
sure.
You're like, you're part of it but you're not, and you're kind of proud of it but you're stinging because, you know, you're on the edge but you're part of it. Yeah.
Well, I want to share with you a similar type of story about a rites of passage. But first, I think let's take the our caller and see what that person has to say.
All righty.
Good morning, caller.
Hi. This
yes.
is Frances.
How are you doing, Frances?
I'm good. I attended the graduation of Portland State students yesterday also.
Oh, I think I saw you. No, I'm just kidding.
My youngest son graduated.
Oh, congratulations.
Well, congratulations.
Yeah, he's 30 years old. What I noticed was the, as far as multiculturalism, it was among families, too.
Yes.
You know, not just your individual families, but among families themselves.
Yes.
Yes.
There was a lot of multicultural people.
Yes.
And that included my family.
Yes.
My young son it has been a lot of hard work for him to complete his college education. His first rite of passage for me, when he was no longer a child, was the first time he was racially profiled in our own neighborhood when he was about 12 years old.
Oh my goodness, that's
no
too
longer,
hard.
He was no longer a child.
Right.
Okay, and he's witnessed friends be killed through violence, and not personally witnessed, but gone to their funerals.
Yes.
And his one of his best friends, Keaton Otis, was killed by the police, and he himself dropped out of school when he was young and kind of self-educated. He gives me a lot of credit for his education, but he did it himself.
Yes.
And when he graduated, his older brother and sister were sobbing. They were just so proud of him. They have provided a whole lot of support to him through this process. But one thing that I didn't realize how powerful this was for him was afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
When he came up to me and hugged me, he did not let go. He was, you could just feel the power in him and how important this was for him to complete. For all of his friends, for all of his community, the struggles that they've all been through, this was a very major accomplishment in his life. And I was overwhelmed. By how much this meant to him.
You know,
that I didn't even realize until I felt that strength. And I'm very, very, very proud of him.
You know, Francis,
and his brother and sisters for supporting him throughout all this time.
He gets a lot of respect because graduating from PSU is no easy feat for a person of color.
No, it is not.
No, a lot of my friends have told me it is like walking a gauntlet every day, every minute.
His wisdom, you know, was reflected in his papers, and all of his teachers eventually came to admire him a great deal, and this wisdom was gained through his life experience in this city of Roses, and he's written a rap called "Rose City Baby," and it is powerful, the message of Portlandia versus what people don't realize happens to a lot of young people in our city.
Yes.
He should drop it by the station for us.
Oh, I will. He's working on a CD. It's almost done, I think.
Excellent.
So I'll get it to you. You take care.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Francis. And congratulations to your son. That's a great accomplishment, not only for he, but as you suggested, for the family. And certainly we're a community and supporting one another. As she was sharing rites of passage about her son, and we began the conversation by thinking of, you know, things you do as children or in school or in your religious community. And I think she was very insightful in sharing. The reality is maybe and you open up that door in terms of rites of passage for many people, girls and boys of color living in this society, which aren't passages of necessary celebration, but an awakening. I remember when I went to junior high school. Now, that's a big thing, you know, leaving one school to the other. But here we were, a bunch of black kids bused to a white school. Mm-hmm. And so the first day of school, we saw a crowd of people, parents outside the school door with signs with, you know, the N-word on it and saying, "You guys aren't allowed in our school." So, I mean, we're sort of like, you know, oftentimes parents want to protect their children, but we can only protect them
Sometimes you can't protect them.
And that's becomes a rite of passage. You as a parent, you know, you always often hear of parents talk about having the talk with their children, which becomes a rite of passage, not only about sex, but about living in
in a combat zone. I remember my mom having that conversation, and it was not easy for her, and she was crying. And I was trying to explain some of my my white coworkers, colleagues, and friends what it's like as a person of color, and especially a black person in the United States, to have to explain what racism is, institutional racism. And it's like telling your child that a respected family member will abuse them, and that basically they are powerless to do anything to stop it, but they do love you, despite the fact that they're powerless to do anything. And that is one of the unfortunate rites of passage that I really wouldn't wish on anyone, because it does take your childhood away. And I'm thinking about the age of 12, you know, you're grappling with changing roles anyway, because your body is changing. You know, you're growing up, you're thinking deeper thoughts about life. You're recognizing that life does not have the permanence and magic that you thought it did. You know, you start seeing behind the wizard's curtain, and you're not quite sure how to process that. And in seeing those things without an adult to translate and filter them, it can cause a lot of trauma to young people, you know. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why I kind of wanted to talk about how we do rites of passage in this country, in our community, so that we think more about what stage of development or stage of life or stage period somebody's in, and be more sensitive to helping them make a positive transition.
You're listening to KBOO, More Talk Radio, with your hosts. I'm Cecil Prescott.
I'm Celeste Carey, and this is More Talk Radio.
More Talk Radio.
I was trying to get it synchronized with you.
Oh, okay. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187, or email us at moretalkradio@gmail.com. We are soliciting your wise
input.
Thoughts, yeah, about rites of passages. What are some that you went through that were important for you? What are some that are important for your community, or are they important for your community? What are some that perhaps are no longer relevant? Want to hear all sorts of, you know, the good, the bad,
and the funny
about rites of passages.
Okay.
No, it's another conversation.
Cat's out the bag.
No, but you know, I'm thinking about you know, when you're a kid, you're growing up, and you have a certain rites of passages, and you know, like the, you know, first time you drive in a car, you get your license.
Or as an adult, the first time you buy your own car.
Your first car accident.
Ooh, I remember my first one. I think I was a freshman in college. I wasn't real happy with that one, because I hit a woman, backed out right as I'm coming down the alley to a parking lot, and she backed out right in front of me, and that was my mother's car.
Oh.
Yes, and I was not happy. Mm. Yeah, because now her car was blind in one eye. And it's, you know, all of those things happen, you know, most prominently the rolling back of time, just five seconds. You know, you keep thinking about that and having to be an adult about it and tell the truth about what happened, and then trying to confront somebody who obviously has more social standing, because I was just a freshman in college. You know, uh-huh. I didn't have much, and I was driving mommy's car, you know, but, you know, somebody who had more social standing and was threatening you. And on top of that, the woman didn't have her glasses on, and she insisted that she didn't have to. And, you know, and I'm thinking, this is not going to work for me. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be in trouble, you know, and just trying to fess up and deal with it. And that was one of my college experiences with the inequity of status and social position.
I see.
You know, because the woman just flat out lied, and I'm just powerless. I'm upset. I'm telling the police officer, she backed out into me. Look at how close. He says, well, you were going too fast. And I'm thinking, going too fast? I was probably going 15 miles an hour. If I'd been going faster, there'd been more damage. But, you know, it was a foregone conclusion.
It was a foregone conclusion. And perhaps that was a rite of passage in terms of relating to some of the things we mentioned earlier in terms of into adulthood. This is the reality, or this is how life is. And mm-hmm. and there are, you know, certain markers in all of our lives that signifies changes in our lives.
Oh, you mean the first time you recognized that what Mama said about there'd be days like this was true?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
or being at one of those parties where, like the, was it Three Dog Night song said, Mama told me not to come?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, those two. Yeah.
Well, let's go to our next caller. Mike, good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Yeah, I just want to remind you that according to the Bible, the first law of wisdom, man, is to fear God. And the Bible also says, train a child up in the way it should go, so when it gets older, it won't depart. So if you don't have that foundation, then everything else is pretty much going to be futile in terms of rite of passage. Because you have to be able to know how to deal with people that, you know, like this racism thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, according to the Bible, we don't wrestle against flesh and blood. So if we're trying to get our freedom, you know, from racism and stuff like that, is it that a spiritual war? I mean, I'm just asking the question. Is
sure.
that a spiritual war? Now, you know, because the Bible says we don't wrestle against flesh and blood. So if black people want to get their freedom, isn't there a path that's already laid out for us to get it? I'm asking the question.
And we'll toss it out.
We'll toss it out.
Certainly.
I'm asking the question.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that the reason black people are in the state they're in today is because black people are unequipped to deal with racism in this day and age. The further we get away from Jim Crow and all of that, and black power and all of that, black people don't even talk about black power no more. You know, they're unequipped nowadays to deal with racism. Anyway, I'll talk to you later.
Oh, don't hang up yet. Are you still there?
I mean, you can't just drop it and run. You got to engage, brother.
Okay. I want to ask you, were there things that were different back in the day in
yes.
terms of black people, in terms of community building that enabled our parents and grandparents to deal with racism that we are unable to do? What are some things that we don't do now that we could have learned or revived, perhaps?
Well, back in the day.
Okay, wait a minute, Mike. When you say back in the day, give us a year range so we can kind of focus. 50s, 60s, 70s?
Okay, back in the 50s, 60s.
Okay.
Black
people, especially down south, black people had permission to, if you see another black person's child getting in trouble, it was understood that you could whoop them. And then bring them home, and the parents don't get upset, and they're grateful for that. So it was like a community raising each other's child.
Mm-hmm.
But then after a while, black people started mimicking white folks by don't touch that child. That's brutality. That's this. That's that. And so they got away from that type of correction. Just like that black guy that got fired for whooping his child in football, Adrian Peterson. So when black people start adopting methods that white folks use to raise their kids, that's how we done got into gangs and all of this other stuff.
So you think... the whole question of in terms of corporal punishment is opening up a wider thing. But I think one point I certainly can agree with you, I believe, is in terms of there was certainly a community responsibility for one another, that you watch out for one another. And that as that community began to break up and we began to not look out for one another, then things became much more tragic for many of us. And I mean, the whole idea in terms of corporate punishment, I mean, there's a whole perhaps historical reason why going back to the time of slavery, why parents might have used the hand or the belt on their children was sort of like to protect them from a worse punishment, whether or not that's still something we should promote now, I doubt. But
well, you know, the thing about it, the Bible talks about it too. It ain't just, I know, I understand the connection with slavery, but the Bible also talks about corporal punishment.
Sure.
But
and it talks about slavery too.
But I'm just saying that black people should define and legitimize their own reality. They shouldn't be.
I agree.
You should agree. So we're mimicking a race of people that are the perpetuators of racism. And you know, and I believe I understand how white folks got to be the way they are, because back during the plague, when they had the plague, the white race was almost wiped off the face of the earth. And from that point on, they developed a methodology to perpetuate that species. And it was conquest, and it was racism, and it was all of that. And so it brought us up, because we came out of feudalism, so it brought us all the way up to this point. And I think that methodology, that racist tendency that they have perpetuated for generations, I think it came after the Black Plague. Anyway,
well,
talk to you later.
Thank you. No, that's it. Thank you. I was going to say, it's not one single event that leads to our situation now. There's multiple strands woven together, and I'm really reluctant to point to one fixed cause. You know, it's a multi-causal situation that's got us here dealing with things. And I think as people of color, it's a multi-causal thing that's also resulted in gangs and poverty and all of that. It's not one thing wherein we stop looking after each other's kids, because the truth be, for some of us, we still do that. But when you're trying to juggle an 80 hour a week, you know, work schedule, just to
multiple jobs.
That's what I'm talking about. 80 hours a week and trying to pay rent and keep some food, you know, you're too tired sometimes to look after your kid, or you're just not there because you're working, trying to survive. So there's a lot more even to that.
Yeah, well, you know, I wonder, just in this portion of the conversation with Mike, you mentioned in terms of community, and I just want to lift up a couple of community events that are happening here in Portland. That Juneteenth celebration, which is the remembrance of the slaves in Texas finally receiving the declaration many months later that they were free.
Months.
Well,
it was a couple of years.
Okay, that they were free, and so here in Portland there will be a great celebration, but it's also a great community building thing where you see people where you probably haven't seen since the last Juneteenth, or so that's a ritual that I think is important.
Yeah, you know, I'm fond of saying the first one I ever, excuse me, attended was actually up in Anchorage, Alaska. And I saw so many Black folks. I was so tickled. It's like, oh, this is cool. You know, but I do encourage people, especially folks of color, Black people, to participate in Juneteenth and be with KBOO, because I know we got a contingent that's marching.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Again, our numbers are 503-231-8187. We're talking about rites of passage, and we want to hear what you have to say.
Yeah.
Let's go to our next caller.
Good morning, Chris.
Hey, good morning. I haven't been listening to the whole show, but I was inspired to call after listening to the last caller. And, you know, I just wanted to echo what you guys had said, you know, that it's definitely more complex than simply, you know, mimicry of white culture. You look at, you want to talk about gangs, you know, I think it was Joseph Campbell that in The Power of Myth, he talks about how gangs fulfill a need for a rite of passage that was lacking in American society, that when families, especially when we look at the families who are the descendants of enslaved Africans, their family structure was completely destroyed for centuries. And so when you have this fragmented community searching for some way to anchor itself and some way to define itself, these gangs, they form this other kind of family. And the jump in or the beat in, right, is a rite of passage that shows them that you have crossed this threshold from one place into another, and you're now one of us, and you have our protection, and we will give you everything that you need in order to survive, right? And as dysfunctional and as violent as that family is, it still fulfilled a function that was missing in that community, albeit a function that was systematically destroyed by both the slave system, by the prison system, by the system of segregation, and in an ongoing way with the introduction of drugs and heavy weaponry into the inner city, which thanks to folks like Gary Webb, we know is, again, something that was intentionally done by U.S. government agencies, right? So we desperately need new rites of passage for our young Black males that can serve as an alternative to these other rites of passage that exist that are clear markers of belonging to a group.
Well, I'd have to even challenge that I'll call it a hypothesis by, exactly. You said Joseph Campbell, is that what you said?
Yeah.
You know, first, in terms of rites of passage, we were hoping to kind of add a little levity. You know, we've kind of strayed into some deep waters here with a more violent rites of passage. But, you know, that's a summation that really is of somebody, it sounds like they're standing outside of the culture, much in the same way that Dinesh D'Souza kind of stood outside the culture and said, Black culture is pathological.
Right.
The problem is that's not the fundamental reason that you have gangs. And far before there were Black gangs here in the United States, you had your immigrant Irish and Italian gangs. And so I dare say that was not necessarily for rites of passage that had diminished in the community. I dare say that the whole reason that they had gangs was to carve out a niche, and especially an economic niche, you know. But
I don't disagree with you.
Okay, but let me finish, because I did listen to
okay.
you.
Yeah,
but in terms of rites of passage, there are many, many, many other rites of passage within the Black community that the Black boys take a part of in urban communities as well. So I don't want people to come away from a conversation here thinking, oh, in the Black community, the rites of passage for young Black men is to get jumped into a gang, because it's not. That is a rite of passage for some and not the experience of many or even most.
Yes, and I agree. I agree with you 100%. You know, I work daily with many youth of color who are not at all involved in gangs. And you know, it's not just a problem for African-American communities, it's a problem for impoverished communities. And as you say, there's a huge economic tie to involvement in organized crime. And there's also a huge social component to that as well, because when the community doesn't have the legitimate means for survival, then alternative means are developed, because survival is the imperative, right?
Yeah.
And so when you're deprived of access to the legitimate means of surviving, you create your own means that are outside of the law. And but then that was fed with drugs and guns being poured into low-income communities of color, right? And that exacerbated the problem. But I 100% agree, it's not the only rite of passage. But it, I bring it up as in terms of raising awareness about the fact that we need to lift up alternative rites of passage that that also provide another means of survival. We need to provide pathways for our low-income communities of color to meet each other's needs in a way that that is both legitimate, but that also defies the status quo, that says we have to go along with this capitalist system.
So let me suggest a couple of alternatives that are out there and that are available. One event that I failed to get to yesterday was at Portland Bible College, was the Black Baccalaureate ceremony, where it was celebration of many. Another is the great work that programs such as SEI is doing with youth. And I you know, Black girls and Black boys, oftentimes Black girls are left out of this conversation. And then the incredible work that Dina Perot is doing
right with her her science and technology education program and math program, and so there are lots of other alternatives. And I appreciate what you're saying in terms of peeling back some of the media and bigotry induced summations of what happens to lead young Black men into to gangs. But I also want to say that impoverished communities of color do still have rites of passage. The problem is having the resources and the time and the access to facilities to realize those rites of passage. And in this case, I would echo the words of that great 20th and 21st century philosopher James Brown that said, "I don't need nobody to give me nothing, just open up the door and I'll get it myself."
Yes, absolutely. And I really appreciate your guys' nuance as well. And, you know, your counter narrative, and that you are, you know, not simply, you know, allowing that dominant narrative to exist and flourish. So I really appreciate your depth of understanding the dynamics of this issue, and even bringing it to the air so that we could talk about it as a community. So,
thank you for your work in the community.
All right.
Thank you, Chris. Our number's here, 503-231-8187.
Well, apparently our Monday gremlins are up in effect.
Okay.
Okay. And this is
Brian.
Brian. Okay. Good morning, Brian.
Oh, good morning.
Here we are with the Scottish Brogue.
Oh, come on.
Hey, I like it, actually. You know what? You know what's cool about it, Brian? I might be sounding a little strange with this, but for me, an accent is like human music.
Well, that's very nice of you.
No, I mean, it's true.
I'm using what I've got. I do a pretty good Kentucky accent.
No, you don't. My folks are from Kentucky. I'm from the South.
I know, but it's not bad. It's not bad for me. And it used to kill me when in Appalachia when they told me I talked funny, you know.
Well, you know, you talk like their ancestors did.
Actually, you're absolutely right. Where I come from, they put H's in front of stuff, and they do in Appalachia, too.
That's right.
And I love the music right away, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, two rites of passage. I come from a small Scottish southern border town, and you know, my whole life has been formed of rites of passage, and I never experienced racism there. And there are a few Pakistani people, and you know, some Germans, which is that. And I was raised by a lesbian aunt, culturally and socially, so I didn't understand anti-homosexual stuff. She taught me to celebrate the female part of me, because it was, we all have it, and it's better to acknowledge it and run with it than to than to deny it and stuff it. Anyway, one of my first rites of passage was my first rugby game, you know.
Oh, wow.
That's where I come from. Rugby's the game, you know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And others. And then, you know, my first cup, and then my first national, you know, local and national swimming awards and stuff like that. And then, but a really important one was I got to go to Pakistan and the Punjab quite early in life, and that opened my eyes and mind totally to, I mean, I fell in love with the food and the culture and the total difference of it.
Mm.
And it instilled in me a thirst for travel, which is still with me today, and I'm getting pretty well stricken in years. And every time I've gone to a new country, worked and learned a new language, it's been a rite of passage. And nice. I got involved with the American tribes, Indian tribes here,
mm-hmm.
And worked with them. And I found their spiritual path extremely touching and worth following. And another rite of passage there was my first sweat lodge ceremony and powwow and stuff like that.
Yes.
You know, so I hope, to me, I keep growing till the day I croak with more and more experiences. I mean, I want to go to Cuba pretty soon before the bloody Walmart and cruise ships and,
yes.
and yeah. Cubano Disney.
That's both of us. I want to get there before that happens.
Yeah, I just, I can't, sometimes I wish that, I mean, it's good of Obama to do that, but it makes me worry about the place.
Mm. I don't know if it was good to do that.
And I hope, maybe even a final rite of passage for me, if I can, I hate to use the word final, but I may go back to Scotland and run for office, you know, based on my experience worldwide. And that's another very important rite of passage for me, when I got involved with politics in my teens and activism, and that's been a lifelong, it was the British Labour Party, as the old Labour Party, not this, not apology that. For one.
Okay.
And I'd like to run and help Scotland to get out of the shadow of Westminster.
Excellent.
So that's, you know, it's just, there's a deer passing my window. anyway,
okay.
That's it for me. I hope I never stop learning and growing and graduating from one thing to the other, and makes me a whole person and kind of acceptable to some people anyway.
All right, well, thank you.
That's what I like about Cable.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Brian.
Thank you.
Bye.
Two other rites of passage I just remember as he was speaking. One, when he was talking about running for election for the first time you vote.
Oh, yes.
And
I remember
that. Another one was when I first got my library card. My dad took me to the library when I was 6 years old, I think.
Oh, yes. You know, and I wonder how many kids still do that as a rite of passage. Go read.
Yeah.
Just go read. All right. We got another caller lined up. Good morning, Vernon.
Good morning. I'm thinking back. I many of my African relatives have marvelous rites of passage, but mine was a lot more improvised. I think, like Brian, I found travel to be an important component, and hitchhiking around the U.S. was quite a rite of passage for me in my adolescence.
Yes.
Oh, my, that's a bygone era. I'd be scared to hitchhike down the block.
You know, many people I know have travel as a component. Unfortunately, they often have Uncle Sam as their travel agent, and they get a violent part of that in their rite of passage that
I don't think it's particularly healthy for the world or for the individual involved.
Yeah.
Oh.
The military is, unfortunately, a rite of passage for way too many people.
Yes.
I would love to see us replace that with something along the lines of voluntary firemen or, emergency services.
AmeriCorps.
Where you could prove your mettle and actually accomplish things that are actually serving the community.
That's why I like AmeriCorps. I feel like everybody in this country, regardless of where you have come from, originated from, the moment you were born or hit this shore, everybody does 2 years service in building up the community in AmeriCorps. You know, and then you could come back later and do two more after college and use what you've learned, so that we'd have your labor work in parks and whatever, and then later in hospitals or schools or whatever. And I like what you said about getting out and serving the community at large.
I had a marvelous opportunity to participate in the rites of passage of a young woman who turned 12 years old while bicycling across the United States.
Oh, my.
She pedaled her own bike 4,000 miles, and it was a tremendous rite of passage for her. She learned that if she put her mind to it and her body to it, she could do whatever she set out to accomplish.
All right.
That's
powerful.
It was very difficult for her, but it was marvelous to watch.
Well, that's inspiring for any of the young women listening.
She has grown to be one of the strongest, most clear-minded young women I've ever known.
Good. Well, thank you for sharing that.
Thank you.
All righty.
And let's try to get our last two callers in.
Michael?
Hello.
Hello.
You said you wanted some from more of the lighter side.
Yes.
So, I was a little kid. I was 5, and I was about to have the rite of passage of going to school for the first time.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
And, little 5-year-old kid, everything the grown-ups do were confusing, and you don't really understand much of what's going on. So my mom brings me to school and brings me to the classroom, and they show me where to sit down, and I sit down, and I put my stuff on the desk. And then about 3 or 4 minutes later, my mom goes to leave. So I get up, and I gather all my stuff, and I go with her, and what I'm thinking is, that was faster than I thought. I wonder what I learned.
Well, what did you think when she turned around and said, "Oh, no, honey, you stay"?
It was okay with me. It wasn't what I thought was going to happen. You know, I thought, well, she's going to stay there, and I'm going to learn whatever that is.
Right.
That's cute. It's like, okay, well, I guess I learned. Well, this learning thing's not so bad.
but I don't know what I learned, but maybe I'll figure it out when I get home. That's
great.
Well, she didn't tell you there was a test, did she?
No, she didn't tell me anything. She just brought me there and dropped me off.
Oh, that's cute. I can appreciate that for sure. I was so excited when I went to school. I was about to skip my little heart out. Mm-hmm. All righty. Well, thank you so much.
Sure. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. And before we go to our next call, let me remind you that coming up is the OMO Variety Hour. Bill Resnick interviews Leo Panetik about Greece and the EU and austerity. And Larry Bolden reviews a novel that asks deep philosophical questions about the objectivity of science, entitled Euphoria by Lily King. And our last caller.
Good morning, Roberta.
Morning. Okay. It's so great listening to you guys. It's like sitting around the breakfast table.
Excellent.
Anyway, I don't know, just quick thought. For me, it's one of the things was when the adult children come back to the family home to roost for the final time.
Yes. Oh, okay. Uh-huh.
It's an interesting time.
Yes, yeah.
We're done with that, I hope.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, good parents know that this is their safe nest, but also the final transition time for leaving the nest. So things are a little bit different,
right,
than say when they were in college. Like decisions about whether you should be asking them to go and do things with you, which things.
Right, yes.
It's interesting.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. Yeah, I don't think we were taught. Things are different now, but you know, when you left the home, you were supposed to leave and not come back. But different time we're living in.
This is a different time.
Yeah. Hey, we're running out of time, so thank you, Roberta. Okay. And you have been listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station. Stay tuned for the OMO Variety Hour. Today is Monday, and Celeste and I will see you next week.
Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the 28th Annual Waterfront Blues Festival, taking place July 2nd through 5th at Waterfront Park in Portland. Four stages, 100 performers, including the Greg Allman Band, Galactic with Macy Gray, and Buddy Guy. There will be after-hours performances, shows on the Portland Spirit, and much more. Again, that's the 28th Annual Waterfront Blues Festival, Thursday, July 2nd through Sunday, July 5th at Waterfront Park in Portland. For more information, go to kboo.fm/waterfrontbluesfestival2015.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor for ALEC Expo's film screening and workshop on June 18th